Owens. Calero's dancing around, throws end zone. Touchdown, Chad Owens. It's first down. Cats inside the 15, into the end zone. Chad Owens, touchdown. Fifth touchdown pass of the night for Calero's. That's a new career best.
Welcome to Pod's Kiwiwi. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Hey, Mike. How was your Thanksgiving?
That was pretty good. You know, turkey, ham, all that stuff, the usual. So, yeah, pretty normal, but pretty good.
I like to hear that. Obviously, as the resident fat guy in our duo here, I love Thanksgiving. It's a holiday built around eating. I love to eat. Who can't love Thanksgiving? And this Thanksgiving was awesome because on the Monday, we had a couple of football games to watch. It was pretty perfect actually. The weather's turning a little bit chilly, so you got to wear a sweater, which I don't mind. And turkey and football and mashed potatoes and gravy. It was just a good holiday Monday.
Yeah, too bad the two games were blowouts, but they can't all be thrillers, right?
No, and you know what? I'm kind of going off script here, but I kind of threw out on Twitter that I thought the CFL should build up the Thanksgiving games as sort of a sequel to Labor Day. And I thought that maybe like Toronto and Ottawa and Winnipeg and BC could be sort of the Thanksgiving Day tradition that we build, because that gives four teams that don't really get – or not – I'm sorry, not Toronto and Ottawa, Montreal and Ottawa. What am I thinking? It gives sort of the four teams that don't really have much to do Labor Day weekend. Like I know Winnipeg plays Saskatchewan. That's a big thing. But for some reason, I don't know if you noticed when they played this week, but Winnipeg fans seem to like to chant BC sucks. So there is like some sort of weird rivalry between the Bombers and the Lions. And I thought on Thanksgiving every year, make it the first game could be the East game. Second game could be the West game, because as much as I enjoyed watching football, Edmonton, Montreal and Calgary, Toronto, even without the sort of disparity that we have between East and West this year, they're not really matchups that jump off the page at you like Calgary, Edmonton, Hamilton, Toronto do. What do you think? Do you think that maybe the CFL should kind of look into making Thanksgiving Day more of a rivalry or a tradition in the CFL?
Why not? I mean, everybody knows about the Labor Day matchups, even if you're not a CFL fan. You know, some people will watch them just because they're such a big, you know, rivalry and such a tradition. So why not try to duplicate that on Thanksgiving Monday? I mean, there's nothing to lose. Like you said, I'd like Montreal and Ottawa would be a good matchup, and then BC and Winnipeg would be great. So if they could do that every single year, you could make something out of it. So I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, and it's, again, like I said, it's the four teams minus the Riders who don't really – they don't play on Labor Day Monday. So it gives those teams a platform. And I know every TSN game, like every CFL game is nationally broadcast on TSN. But I don't know. I think it would be sort of fair. And Hamilton, Toronto, Calgary, and Edmonton get Labor Day. And then these four squads can have Thanksgiving. And I think it'd be a good secondary tradition to build up. I don't know if that'll ever happen. We have different matchups every year, it seems. But I've always thought, and just really thought this year, because of the matchups, that they weren't that interesting. I still watch both games, obviously. But I thought this could be something they should do going forward. And who knows? Maybe one day it'll happen.
I'm hoping so.
Okay, so holy crap, do we have a lot to talk about. We did not have a game to watch this week. We had no Ticats game to cover, so there's no game review to do. But man, oh man, were the Ticats busy on their bye week or what? They made some significant changes to the roster. There were signings, there were releases, there are injuries, there was a massive trade. So let's just jump right into this, Mike. Let's start with the signings. This team made a slew of roster moves over the last week since you and I sat down to record. So here's who they added. Are you ready? They added Kevin Elliott, wide receiver from the Toronto Argonauts. Linebacker Keon Raymond. Running back kick returner Kendall Lawrence. Defensive back Darius Brooks. Defensive back Cleishon Page. Linebacker Matt Wells. Defensive end Denzel Perrin. And offensive lineman Jace Daniels. Do you have all that, Mike?
It's a lot, but I think I took it all in.
So which of these additions has you most excited, sir?
Well, the Keon Raymond addition is a big thing. I think he can help out in the linebacking corps, and he's playing that linebacker position where you do more covering, I believe. So he can help out the secondary as well. So I think that's a huge move by then. Yes, he is, 33 years old. He's getting up there in age, but These are moves, most of them, made to help them now, to help them down the last four games and into the playoffs if they make it. So I think that's a great addition to this defense. And with, you know, the trade that they got players with, I'm excited for Xavier Fulton. You know, he's getting up there in age as well. He's had his injury troubles in the past, but he's a former All-Star. So he's taken over the left tackle position. He'll be in the game this week. And we're going to see if he still has it. And I'm really excited that we have a new guy in there at left tackle, an experienced guy that's played well in the past. And I'm really hoping that he can add a lot to this offensive line and help out the protection of either Mazzoli or Claros, whichever quarterback's in there.
Well, Fulton's got a championship pedigree. He was on that 2013 Riders team that beat Hamilton to win the Grey Cup. And he kind of solidifies, even if just for 4 to 7 games this year. Hopefully the Ticats can get to the Grey Cup and he ends up playing in 6 or 7 games, depending on if they get a bye or not. Just having him there, it kind of solidifies that one weak spot that's been on this offensive line, and that's been the left tackle position. It started with Brian Simmons. That didn't work. He was replaced by Terrence Campbell, who in his second game looked completely lost out there, getting blown up by Jonathan Newsom repeatedly. We talked about it when we talked about the loss to the Riders a few weeks ago. It's just nice to have, even if it's going to take a while for him to, maybe it's going to take a week, or he's a veteran player, so it's not going to take him forever to figure this thing out. But I like that signing as well, or that addition as well. But Keon Raymond, man, if you go back and listen to the episode we did after he was unceremoniously and ludicrously released by the Toronto Argonauts, I'm fairly certain you can hear both you and I gush over this guy and say, what about landing in Hamilton? So when I saw his picture and his name on a press release for the Ticats saying they'd added guys to the practice roster, I got super excited. He's going to start this week against the Red Blacks. He's playing that Sam linebacker position that had been kind of rotated through. Johnny Sears had played there. Rico Murray had played there. Brandon Sermon had played there most recently. Probably most well-known, Markeith Knowlton from a few years ago when most outstanding defensive player playing that position. He's going to add a veteran savvy to this defense that is also going to allow a defensive back to be kicked out and maybe help that secondary out. And Raymond himself is going to help out the secondary. So he's the guy that I'm most excited about adding to this team. And just look at that linebacking group. Keon Raymond, Larry Dean, and Simone Lawrence. I need a napkin to wipe the drool off my face. That threesome is fearsome. And I'm also kind of excited about Kevin Elliott. When we talked last week after the surprising release of all those receivers in Toronto, Elliott was definitely the third on my list of the guys I wanted to see brought here. But as we'll get into later, the other two guys signed elsewhere. But they needed to sign one of them, and they did, and I applaud them for that. So, Raymond, I really like. Elliott, I really like. I'm with you. We'll get into more into the trade later, but I really like the Fulton move. I would like to mention, though, before we move on, that Darius Brooks, I don't know if you listen to the Piffles podcast out of Regina, but one of their co-hosts, Alex, he's really high on Brooks and thinks that he could be the best signing this team has done over the past week. So I'm going to keep my eye on him. I don't think he's playing this week. I think he's still on the practice roster, but interesting. He has some CFL experience, played in Calgary, played in Saskatchewan. So again, any DB help can work if it helps. Like, I'm all for it. So I'm going to keep my eye on him when he gets into the rotation. But yeah, Keon Raymond, man. Whew, can't wait to see him play on Friday.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how he does. I hope that he is the guy he was earlier in this. I mean, he was just, you know, a couple, you know, maybe a month ago or so that he got released, and he was playing at a high level. So this guy's going to add a lot, I think. And, you know, one of the guys they had was Cleishon Page, and that name is – I recognize that name. He was with them last year, was he not?
He was with them earlier this year, actually.
Okay.
I think he was released – I know he was with them in camp. May have played a couple games, if I'm not mistaken, early in the year, but he was with them earlier this season.
Okay. Yeah, I thought I recognized the name. But yeah, it's a lot of pretty good additions, you'd think. It just shows that the Ticats are going for it all this year. I mean, they're not by any means giving up, just like the Argos seem to be. They're acquiring any talent they can to help them out down this stretch run. So that's an exciting thing for Ticats fans to know, that they're not giving up on this season. I mean, why would they? They're only 1 point out of first in the terrible, terrible East. So they still got a pretty good chance of making a push. And with these guys coming into the fold, I think it's a good chance that they could end up first in the East.
So to bring in all these guys, that usually means that guys have to go. So to make room for some of these players, the team did release a couple of players this week. Brandon Sermons has been let go, as has DJ Hunter. Sermons started for the Ticats both in the secondary and at linebacker this year. And I got to think that the addition of Raymond, who we mentioned will start against Ottawa, is likely why Sermons was let go. Hunter, as far as I can recall, never played for the team during the regular season. But if he did, it was probably strictly in a special teams capacity. And my guess there is that they brought in Darius Brooks, and that probably hastened Hunter's departure. They see Brooks as an upgrade. I wish both these guys well. I hope they land somewhere else and have great careers. But as our former general manager, Bob Obilovich, that was a tongue twister, used to say, better is better, Mike. And these players that are being replaced, both Sermons and Hunter, are being replaced by players that are significantly better. So any thoughts on these two releases?
Well, Sermons came in and didn't really impress in any of the games he played in. So it's not a huge surprise to me. And the other guy, I don't think he's played at all. So it's not huge losses, I don't think. Like you said, better is better. The guys they're bringing in should be an upgrade at those positions. So I hope them the best as well. I think they'll find spots. If not this year, I think they'll be in a training camp next year. So all the best to them, but I think we got better talent now.
I couldn't agree with you more. Okay, so you kind of touched on a little bit earlier. The Ticats made these signings. They released these players. But that wasn't it. They also did swing a massive, massive trade with the Saskatchewan Roughriders just a couple of days before the trade deadline that passed with basically a whimper. The Ticats have acquired defensive lineman Justin Capicotti and, as we discussed, offensive lineman Xavier Fulton in exchange for defensive lineman Lyndon Gaydosh, wide receiver Tommy Streeter, and fourth and seventh round draft picks in the upcoming draft. So, Mike, what are your overall thoughts on this deal?
I think it's a good deal for them. Gaydosh had a lot of potential in his day. He's had some injury troubles. I still think he's a pretty darn good player and can contribute to the Rough Riders. But, you know, in exchange, we get Jason Capicotti, who had a monster season last year. Not so much this year with the Riders, but still a lot left in the tank for him. You know, we don't lose anything in the ratio because Capicotti is a Canadian. Giving up the fourth round and seventh round draft picks, the draft is very important, we all know. But those are later round draft picks, and, you know, it's kind of a crapshoot at that point of the draft. So I'm not too worried about that. Streeter, I don't know what he is. I never heard him before. I saw the clips, the YouTube clips of him playing on Three Down Nation at the scratching post when he was signed. And he looks like a pretty good prospect. He's a tall guy. He seems to have a lot of speed. I think he was in the NFL for a bit. So, you know, he could go either way giving him up. He could be a great player or he could be released, next season by the Riders. So we don't know about that. But bringing in Fulton, I think, is a great move. We talked about it a little bit earlier, but he just brings so much experience at that left tackle position, which is one of the most important positions on the offensive line. So he's just a rental player. I think he'll probably just play for the rest of the season, but we need him badly. So I'm happy with this trade, and I think it helps us out tremendously.
Well, I think this is one of those rare trades that you see in sports that's actually a win-win for both teams. The Riders, they get a couple of young players. They get some draft picks that they can help to restock their Canadian talent, which is woefully inadequate. And Hamilton gets a pair of veteran players that can help them right now because, as crazy as it sounds, the window for this team to get to a Grey Cup or win a Grey Cup this year is very much still wide open. They're 1 point out of first place, despite the fact that they are two games under 500. They got this home-and-home set with the Red Blacks. If they can sweep that, they pretty much punch their ticket to the East Final. I said this, I wrote a piece about all these moves for Three Down Nation earlier in the week, and I basically said that the Ticats are going for broke. They have brought in a number of veteran players to win this year. This team now, if they can get these guys involved, if they can get these guys acclimated quickly, this team becomes very, very dangerous. Losing Gaydosh is kind of, he basically, not to disparage the guy, but he had been jumped. Obviously, Ted Laurent is going to be a starter as long as he's here. And Michael Atkinson had leaped over him for that backup, non-import or national defensive tackle position. Like, he was always going to be Laurent's backup, and Gaydosh had basically been a healthy scratch all season. they get something for a guy that they weren't using. Yes, he's a former number one overall pick, so clearly they see something in him. Maybe he's going to get a chance to shine in Saskatchewan. Tommy Streeter, say what you want about Junior Collins or John Chiles or even Kevin Elliott, but those three guys were going to play over him anyway. And if this team gets their receivers healthy, which who knows if they will, obviously we're going to talk a little later about one guy that we know is not coming back, but their American receiving talent is very deep. I don't think they gave up a lot, but I think Saskatchewan still got stuff that they needed. They need receivers. They need non-import help or national help and getting draft picks. It's strange when you look at it and you go, I don't see a flaw for either side. And to me, I guess that makes a pretty darn good trade.
Yeah, if you know, there's usually a winner or loser, but yeah, I think it's pretty balanced, this trade. And I think down the road, it might be more beneficial to the Riders. But for this season, I think that the Ticats really, you know, stole one. I think they did really well in the immediate future. So I'm happy about that.
Well, and the thing is, Capicotti and Fulton are both free agents at the end of the year. They could both go somewhere else, or maybe they come here for 6 weeks and go, oh, you know what? It's great being in this locker room. It's great being around these other guys. And they decide to ink extensions. And then Hamilton's got two really talented players that can help solidify. Like Kappa, could you imagine like a defensive end rotation of Justin Capicotti and John Chick and Adrian Tracy? Like that's pretty darn good, keeping all those guys fresh. I don't see a downside for either side in this deal. Like I said, short term, I think this helps out Hamilton, and long term, I think it helps out the Riders. And I think at the end of the day, if you can say that about a trade, it's a pretty darn good trade.
Yeah, for sure.
We've done the signings, we've done the releases, we've done the trade. Now we have to talk about injuries, and holy smokes, are there a lot. We'll start with two guys who it looks like are done for the year. First, Chad Owens. It came out that he has a broken foot and is likely not going to play the rest of the season. So if you're listening to the show, you'll notice that all the clips in the intro song were Chad Owens clips. And I decided to do that because he's out for the season. And I figured since the jersey watch is over, he will not get to the 10 touchdowns. He will not get to the 1,000 yards. So I will not be buying a Chad Owens jersey. I thought we had to do something for him because it truly is a shame that he is going to miss the rest of the season, because he was having an excellent year. 58 catches for 808 yards and 5 touchdowns. I have no idea if he'll be back next year, but in words I never thought I would speak, Mike, I hope he is. I hope Chad Owens is a Hamilton Ticat next year. Are you with me on that?
Yeah, I hope so. I think I'm with you. I'm not sure if they're going to bring him back or not. I mean, if they get younger talent that they think will benefit them more, maybe he's not a Ticat next year. But just based on the way that he played, what he brought to this team, you know, the big touchdown catches he caught, you know, the one-handed catches, and just played awesome all year. So, you know, I'd like to see him back, and I hope he is back. I think he brings a lot to the table, talent-wise on the field, and then, you know, leadership-wise in the locker room.
There are three plays for me that will stick out for Chad Owens this season. One was the amazing one-handed grab on the two-point convert against Edmonton when they played the Eskimos at Commonwealth. I still don't know how he caught that ball. It was awesome. The touchdown catch that he had to seal the game week one against the Argos at BMO was just... Chris Cuthbert says it's probably the sweetest touchdown pass he's ever caught. I couldn't agree more. That was just awesome. And then, of course, the game-winning... what turned out to be the game-winning touchdown in the Labor Day Classic after years of this guy killing the Ticats, especially on Labor Day. If you go back, I think it was the 2012, the last classic at Ivor Wynne. Owens just had a monster game. So this guy was a Ticat.
That one-handed catch on the last drive to like put them into field goal range. I remember because I was at that last Labor Day game at Ivor Wynne, and I hated him a lot that day. But he really killed us in the Labor Day Classic in 2012.
Yeah, so to have him score what turned out to be the game-winning points against the Argos in what was maybe one of the greatest Labor Day games ever played, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it now. Like, that game was just so awesome, and for him to do that, it was just like, he's a Ticat now, and I really do hope that they find a way to bring him back. I don't know if they will. Younger players, Kevin Elliott's come in. He's one of the reasons Owens was out of Toronto, too. They brought in those young receivers, and Owens didn't really have a spot. But I can't believe we would have gone back to February and this guy signed, and you would have said, you're going to be by the end of the year talking about how much you want him back. I'd have called you crazy. But No, I really hope this guy returns. Another guy that we're dealing with a loss is Jeremy Lewis. The right tackle for the Ticats was injured at practice this week, and it looks like he is done for the season as well. Doesn't this make the move to trade for Xavier Fulton even bigger?
It's huge. I mean, who's going to – I guess they could put Simmons out there, but this game they've got Campbell in the right tackle position, I believe, so he's going to replace Lewis. You know, we talked about the tackles in earlier episodes. They haven't been having the best of seasons, but it sucks that he went down. He's a veteran presence, and, you know, now we got a rookie in there playing that position. So, you know, Campbell's been up and down when he's been in there, so we're going to have to see how he plays that right tackle opposed to left.
Yeah, I wonder if he'd maybe better suited for the right side. Yeah, that's kind of like maybe this is, you know, they find him his spot where he's supposed to be, and he excels there. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, now when this news came out and then it was, man, they got Xavier Fulton, and it was like, okay, well now it makes a lot more sense and things can shuffle around. And you look at that line, if Campbell is able to solidify himself on the right side, and Fulton's able to acclimate himself really quickly, dude, that's not a bad that's not a bad offensive line.
Well, you got the three Canadians in the middle that have been doing a stellar job all year. I think, is Diakowski back this game?
He's the backup. Revenberg, I believe, is still the starter.
Okay, so maybe Revenberg has leaped over Diakowski, or maybe Diakowski's just not completely ready yet. But either way, I have confidence in those three guys in the middle, if it's Diakowski or Revenberg. And if we can get the tackles that we want, doing their thing, yeah, you're right. This offensive line could be pretty stellar.
So we're still not done with the injuries. Like, holy smokes. It seems like the theme of this entire podcast has been injuries since we started it way back in January, all those years ago. Like, so two big name guys will not be in the lineup this week. Zach Caleros and Luke Tasker will both miss this game. Caleros is still dealing with the lingering effects of a concussion that he suffered during the game against the Stampeders. And Tasker is still out from that injury that he suffered against the Owls that no one really knows what the hell happened. And he's just been put on the 6-game injured list. So, man, these are two big blows to the team as they head into this crucial back-to-back with Ottawa that will, I say likely, but will definitely decide first place in this, like you said, terrible, terrible East Division.
It seems like last time Tasker was injured was the beginning of last season, I believe, and we never really knew what the injury was either. So very secretive about Tasker's injuries. But yeah, it really sucks that he's on the 6th game. I don't know if that means that he's done for the season. I mean, we only have 4 games left. So if we made it to the Grey Cup, he might be back in that game, or they could take him off early. I'm not sure. But yeah, losing Tasker is just terrible because he's such a dependable guy. He just catches everything that's thrown his way. He's, you know, he makes big plays. He's you know, if maybe the number one receiver in that receiving corps. So yeah, that really sucks. And with Zach, I mean, he could be out just this game, or he could be out for the rest of the season. We don't know with the concussions. You know, I think the Ticats are letting on that it's not a major injury, but you just never know with concussions. It could be a week, it could be a year. They're just so unpredictable. So yeah, both those injuries are a real tough loss for the Ticats.
Yeah, so obviously Jeremiah Mazzoli will start for the Ticats this week. And the last time he played the Ottawa Redblacks, he had a pretty darn good game and nearly got this team to the Grey Cup. So hopefully there's a little bit of Mazzoli magic in him this week when these two teams meet up. Last but definitely not least, I want to send a shout out, and I know you do as well, to former Ticat linebacker Eric Harris, who's now with the New Orleans Saints. It was a great story when he went down to the Saints and made the active roster. And like I any Ticat player, really any CFL player in general that makes it in the NFL, I root for and hope that they do well. Unfortunately, his season is over due to a torn ACL. But this guy, the things that he's had to overcome, just smaller stature guy, went to a small school, came up to the CFL, got a shot in the NFL. I have no doubts that he's going to come back better than ever and reclaim his spot on the New Orleans roster next year. So best wishes are sent out to him. And I know I speak for myself, and I'm sure I speak for you as well.
Yeah, for sure. I was looking forward to watching play with the Saints this year. Also, I was looking forward to watching both those players, and it looks like it's not to be, but hopefully they both come back and come back strong with their NFL team.
All right, deep breath, Mike. Deep breath. That's it. We're out of the Ticat news. We're into the CFL news because, believe it or not, other teams in the CFL actually did stuff this week. Since the last time you and I recorded, there's been a number of big signings across the league. The Saskatchewan Roughriders signed linebacker Enoch Mwamba. The Edmonton Eskimos signed Vidal Hazelton. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers picked up Torrey Gurley. So the big three that we talked about last week when we were like, I bet you in a week we're talking about them all signing somewhere, all three were picked up in less than a week. So out of these three signings, Mwamba, Hazelton, Gurley, which one do you think is the biggest?
Do we know if Hazelton actually signed at Edmonton? Like, it's not official, is it?
No, the team hasn't officially announced it. He has said he signed. I'm guessing they're going to wait until after their bye week to announce that he has signed. Because with the Elliott signing, too, we heard, I want to say it was like Thursday or Friday that he had signed, and they didn't announce it officially until Monday.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think they're all big. I mean, they're all quality players, but I'm going to go with the Gurley signing in Winnipeg just because of, you know, the short stature of many of their receivers. I'm not sure if any of the receivers are over 6 foot. So bringing in Gurley, I believe he's 6'4". I think that's a huge addition to for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers going into this playoff stretch. I mean, he adds a lot. He's a talented guy, and he can go up and get those high tosses in the end zone or wherever he might be thrown. So I'm going to go with Gurley with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers just because of, you know, Dressler and Smith and all those shorter receivers.
Yeah, I can't really argue with you on that at all. But, as you know, the Mwamba signing is obviously big, former number one overall pick, guy who can, quote-unquote, ratio bust by starting middle linebacker. But I'm going to go with Hazelton, and here's why. Darrell Walker, enjoy him because his CFL career is over in anywhere between three and six games, depending on how they fare in the playoffs. He's going to go to the NFL. He's going to get an NFL shot. As much as I'd love to see him continue his career up here, he's some NFL team is going to bring him in. He's going to be the next Eric Rogers. So I think it's the Hazelton signing because now they've apparently, the rumor is that they've signed Hazelton to a 2-year deal. So he's there for the remainder of this season plus next year. They lose Walker. Boom, Hazelton, there's your replacement for Walker. And I think that's huge to keep that Edmonton offense, which is awesome, humming.
Yeah, and it's huge for this year. I mean, they're obviously heavy on Bowman and Walker. I mean, why wouldn't they be? They're both great receivers. But, you know, throw Hazelton into that third spot, and you got another really solid option to throw the ball to. So I think it helps them a lot this season. And like you said, if Walker goes down south, you just slide Hazelton in, and you got a pretty good replacement for Walker. You know, I don't think Hazelton's the level of receiver as Walker, but he's a pretty good player.
He's still someone that can take coverage off of Bowman. He's not in any way the receiver Walker is. Walker has been, like, just phenomenal. It's incredible to have watched him play these last 2 years. But I think Hazelton could be an adequate replacement because he has performed well in this league. He's the reigning East Division most outstanding rookie, so it's not like this guy can't play. And don't forget, Edmonton also has Brandon Zylstra, who looked awesome on Monday. So
yeah,
that's a pretty deep receiving core. Even when you add the Canadians, Nate Kuhorn, Chris Getzlaff, that's an Edmonton offense that is very dangerous, that by adding Hazelton just gets even more dangerous.
Yeah, for sure. I've been impressed with their offense all year. You know, they've had a couple off games, but for the most part, it's been pretty impressive. So adding this piece, I think, will help them a lot in that tough, tough West Division. If they're in the West Division playoffs, they might be in the East Division playoffs. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? So speaking of the East Division, we have some major news out of Ottawa, who is the Hamilton Tiger Cats opponent this week. Couple of news stories there. Henry Burris, after I would say a phenomenal replacement of Trevor Harris against the Saskatchewan Roughriders. I think he led them on like 3 touchdown drives, even though the last one was like completely penalty aided, which was ridiculous. Like they went like 90 yards in like 18 seconds, and it was just penalty after penalty. It was
absolutely pathetic. I hate when that happens, but you know, whatever. I guess penalty's a penalty, so they got to call it.
Yeah, like they were all legitimate penalties, but it was pathetic on Saskatchewan's part. That game never should have gone to overtime. Anyway, he has been reinserted as the starter and will start against the Ticats, but he will be out without probably his best weapon, Chris Williams, done for the year with a torn ACL. I don't know if you saw the play, I'm sure you did, where he tore his knee. It was just so innocuous. It was like he goes up to snag a ball. I think it was intercepted on the play. He comes down, lands, looks normally, starts clutching his knee, is taken to the sideline, has his knee wrapped, is helped to the back. I even said on Twitter, I said, when this news came out, I said, I wouldn't be surprised if by Monday we hear torn ACL and he's done for the year. And I didn't want to be right because this league without Chris Williams is worse off. He's a great player. He's fun to watch. But I was not shocked in the least. But these two moves kind of changed the landscape a bit, no?
Absolutely. I mean, you take the number one receiver at Ottawa. Burris had a real good connection with him last year. You know, they still have a lot of talent, receivers-wise. But, you know, this kind of leads into my bozo. I'm going to go not the obvious route. I'm going to go with Rick Campbell for, you know, switching back and forth with the quarterbacks. It just looks kind of – it looks bad on them. You know, you have Burris. He's the reigning MOP from last year. He has, you know, he got injured. Trevor Harris comes in, he plays well. Then Burris comes back and has, like, okay games and nothing spectacular. And then you name Harris the starter, and now Burris is the starter again. So it's just back and forth. It's got to be confusing for these quarterbacks. I'm sure Burris is overjoyed to be back in there. But, yeah, Campbell gets my bozo just for making a decision and not sticking with it.
That's completely fair. I also will give a small bozo to the fans of the Red Blacks who, since when did Harris sign? Day of opening a free agency, kept telling everyone that would listen, there's no quarterback controversy here. There's no quarterback. Burris is the one and Harris is the two and this will all work out and there'll be no flip-flopping and swapping and all that other sorts of stuff. And pretty much eight other fan bases said, okay, you just wait and see. And here we are at the end of the season and this team cannot settle on a quarterback. What if happens if Burris goes out this week and has a bad Hank game, throws a couple of interceptions, they're going to throw Harris back at like this. This has the potential to explode, which is exactly what we thought could happen at the beginning of the year. And the last thing this team needs that has lost 7 of their last 10 games is to head into the playoffs with not knowing who the hell the starting quarterback is.
Mm-hmm. And I don't understand Trevor Harris. I mean, he looks like one of the best quarterbacks in the league at times, and then he just disappears. He did the same thing last year with Toronto later in the season. You know, we heard a rumor that he said he wanted to be the highest paid player in the league and then his play dropped off. Same thing happened this year. I mean, I don't know what it is with him, but he looks like a very inconsistent quarterback at this point.
It seems like pressure gets to him. When he was starting in Toronto last year and everything was going smoothly and Ricky Way was still rehabbing, he was slinging it and he was playing great. And then as soon as Ray started to get healthy, it seemed like his play dropped off. It's like the guy over his shoulder almost makes him scared to play. And it kind of happened this year when Burris was not healthy. He's out there throwing 400-yard games and then 4 touchdown games. And he looks like he could be the MOP of this East Division, which if you look at all the teams, I'm not sure who's coming out as the East Division MOP, but that's another conversation for another day. But as soon as Burr starts to get a little bit healthier, it's like his play dropped off. And this is a guy who 2 weeks ago against BC threw for almost 500 yards, and then he couldn't complete a pass against Saskatchewan. I don't know. It's kind of mind-boggling to me that the guy who you've pegged as your quarterback of the future, even if I say quarterback of the present because the dude is freaking 30 years old, not much of a future ahead for a 30-year-old quarterback, but it's kind of mind-boggling that this team would go back to the 41-year-old who's probably only got a year and a bit left in his career at the expense of the 30-year-old QB who they want to be their franchise quarterback for the next decade. Ottawa could be doing to Trevor Harris exactly what Toronto did, and we all surmise that because of the Milanovic going back to Raid, that kind of pissed Harris off and told him that he didn't want to go back to Toronto. They could be doing the same thing here. I know Harris is under contract for another year, but if the writing's on the wall and Henry Burris starts the rest of this year, they're not going to pay Trevor Harris $400,000+ next year to sit on the bench. So I don't know. This just it just seems like complete mismanagement to me of the quarterbacks.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. Maybe he's like a Ricky Foggy type of player. You know, he's a really good backup. He comes in, he does his thing, but then he just can't be a starter in this. Like, I don't know if that's true or not. Like, we're going to have to see more of him. He's going to have to actually be given the starter's reins and, like, actually run with it for a season to actually know if this guy is the real deal or not. I mean, I just kind of flash back to last year. Remember when I put out that tweet about him and his brother went after me?
That was I'm so glad you brought that up when you were like, he wanted to be the highest paid quarterback in the league. I was like, I wonder if Mike's going to remember that time that his brother like ripped the two of us apart.
Yeah.
Because how dare we talk up because, you know, I absolutely remember that.
Yeah, that was kind of funny. But I don't know, it kind of looks that way that he's just very up and down. Kind of like Mazzoli, but, you know, I'm hesitant to compare Mazzoli to Harris because I think Harris might be a better quarterback than Mazzoli. But yeah, he's just very up and down, and I don't know what his future holds. I don't know if he's a career backup or if he's going to be an actual starter next year for the Red Blacks. Because if Burris comes in and really tears it apart and does a great job, and, you know, leads the Red Blacks back to the Grey Cup, I mean, how could you not start him next season? It would be a very tough decision. So I don't know what the future holds for Trevor Harris.
I don't think any of us do. It'll be an interesting offseason in Ottawa if this goes their way, if it goes well for them. And we'll have to wait and see this, because this is a brewing controversy that they didn't want, that they said they weren't going to have, and now they have. So Mark Trestman, former Montreal Alouettes head coach, two-time Grey Cup winning head coach, one of the most revered head coaches in recent CFL history, was fired by the Baltimore Ravens as their offensive coordinator. There's obviously, Montreal has a head coaching opening. There's obviously been talk that could Trestman go back there. Do you think Trestman could find a home back in the CFL?
I think it's a possibility. It's all up to him. I mean, the job, I'm sure that any, well, not any team, but a lot of teams would be more than happy to bring him in as the head coach. He had tremendous success with the Montreal Alouettes. But it's all up to him. If he wants to come back to the CFL, I don't know. Maybe his NFL opportunities are kind of gone now. You know, he had the head coaching job in Chicago. That didn't work out. I don't know that any coach could come in there and work with Jay Cutler and work that out. But
oh, my God. Is Jay Cutler not the worst quarterback? I've had this discussion with a number of people, and we're getting off topic here a little bit because we're going to talk about the NFL. Do you not think that Jay Cutler is the worst quarterback, like, period, in professional sports? Like, I'm talking about, like, NFL, CFL, like, third-string practice roster guys. Like, that, he's terrible.
He's bad. I think maybe, you know, he has all the talent. I think that he has a cannon for an arm. I think that he could be a top-level guy, but he's just, you're right, it just hasn't worked out. After a while, a guy with all the potential, you know, if he doesn't live up to that potential, then he's a bad quarterback. So, yeah, I agree. He's just, I think he, you know, I obviously don't know him personally, but from all the things I've heard is he's not a good leader. He's not a good locker room guy. He doesn't have a good attitude, and he doesn't apply himself on the field. So, yeah, he's a bad quarterback.
$1 million arm, nickel head. That's what I'll say. That's what it feels like to me. But anyway, back to Trestman. Sorry, I wanted to talk to you about that because every time I've heard people, oh, he's got a great arm and he's got all these physical attributes. It's like, but he throws like 9,000 interceptions. It's just people who think that he's still a good quarterback. It's like he's been in the NFL for over a decade. It's like we know what he is, and I don't know. I just need to get it off my chest. Anyway, so back to Trestman.
Yeah, he might be out of NFL opportunities because you know the Baltimore Ravens offense, I don't really follow them that closely, but they couldn't have been doing too well. I think he could come back to the CFL and, lead another team easily. I think that Montreal is an obvious landing spot for him if he wanted to come back to the CFL. And Toronto, I mean, if Toronto landed in Trestman, that would be a huge, huge thing for them, I think. You know, Milanovic is still there, and I don't know how the ownership feels about him and Barker, but bring Trestman in, be a GM/head coach, and I think you could do pretty good things.
I never thought of Toronto, honestly. I really thought with the relationship he has with the Wettenhall family and with his relationship with Jim Popp, they have apparently remained friends since Trestman left to go coach the Chicago Bears. I never really thought it. I thought Montreal was like the landing spot, but Toronto makes sense because, man, they kind of loaded up. Barker went out there and he signed free agents, which he doesn't do, and they kind of loaded up to get to the Grey Cup, and that team is, well, we had them in our way too early predictions. We had the Argos, I believe both of us had them in the Grey Cup, if I'm not mistaken. I know I did. I had them winning the whole damn thing. They have just been atrocious. They've won, what, once since the end of the summer? Like, they lost Labor Day, they beat Hamilton, and then they haven't won since. Like, it's, they have just not been good, and heads are going to roll there, and it could be that the head coach and the GM are out, and who knows, maybe Trestman could find that. That's a really, really good thought you had there, Mike.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, maybe David Braley had a connection with Barker and Milanovic, and yes, they won the Grey Cup in 2012, but I'm not sure that offensive scheme is working out anymore for the Argos. And they really fumbled the ball with this quarterbacking situation. I mean, they're rolling the dice on Drew Willey. If Drew Willey doesn't work out, I think heads are going to roll because, you know, Bell and Tannenbaum on the Argos now, and I don't know how they feel about Barker and Milanovic, and maybe they want to bring in, a big name for the Toronto market. I don't think that'll draw any more fan attention or anything, but I'm sure they want to win and win now and win next year. So maybe Milanovic and Barker are at the end of the rope in Toronto.
That might be something worth keeping an eye on. You just opened an interesting can of worms there. And I think Mark Trestman might not move the needle in Toronto necessarily right away. But if he comes back up here and does what he did in Montreal and that team gets out to 10-1 starts, the fans will show up. The fans will show up for that winning team. So I think that might be something that can happen.
Yeah, I think Toronto needs to be a juggernaut. I think they need to be, the team that everyone else hates. You know what I mean? Like, they need to be winning year after year after year to really bring in the crowds. That's easier said than done. But, if they could carve out a reputation of being this hated team, that big Toronto team, maybe they could get some good crowds out at BMO Field.
Yeah, they need to be the New York Yankees of the CFL.
Yeah, like, spend over the cap. Be evil. Like, do that. Play that card. I mean, they have the money to do it. I'm not, saying they should cheap, but if that's what they have to do to bring in the crowds, then I guess they should do it.
Do an old fashioned pro wrestling heel turn and become the Iron Sheik of the CFL, right?
Yeah. Form the new NWO.
they could be the BWO. They literally would be the Blue World Order.
Yeah, that's true. Eh? Yeah.
Okay. So, let's move on from Trestman. Mike,
bring in the blue meanie as an offensive point.
He's lost a lot of weight now, so I don't think he could play like old line, but he could be. Wow. He could be enough. But could you imagine him coming out in those cutoff shirts?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Oh man, Stevie Richards comes out, starts super kicking people. Holy smokes, you're taking me back to my early teen years, sir.
Yeah, that'd be a good marketing plan for that.
Good. I might buy it. If they start selling BWO shirts at Argos games, I might be tempted to buy one.
It'd be hot items.
All right, so it wouldn't be a week in the CFL, Mike, without some sort of controversy. And this week we had two of them. The first, we have the ending to the Winnipeg-BC game from Saturday after an awesome goal line stand by the Bombers where Mo Leggett, who had hurt himself earlier in the game, comes back in and makes what looked to be a game-saving tackle. It sure did look like on the very next play, the Bombers were running the ball around the clock, that Andrew Harris fumbled. And the command center looked at it and said there was no fumble. Social media exploded, as it usually does after a controversial play, with the vast majority of people, including some Bomber fans, saying that the CFL command center botched this call. So, Mike, I have a simple question for you. Fumble or no fumble?
I think it was a fumble. I think it was very close to not being a fumble. I think it came out just before his knee touched. So I think that they maybe need to get more angles, more cameras for TSN to get some of these replays right, because there's insufficient evidence, then they might need more cameras to make it more sufficient. I mean, even though we saw the replay that showed that it was a fumble before he hit the ground. So I don't know what they were looking at, but they made the wrong call.
They did make the wrong call, and to me, they doubled down on it. They said that they didn't have, like you said, they had insufficient video evidence to overturn it. That was the league's excuse after the game. And I don't know what more you needed to see that ball was out before Andrew Harris hit the ground, but it was right there. There was a camera right on it. And yeah, I've heard some people say, the small minority that say it wasn't a fumble, say, well, you don't see when his butt comes down. You know what? If that's not a fumble, then there's never been a fumble in the history of this league. Like, that was very clearly a fumble. It should have given BC the ball there. They should have had a chance to win that game. They didn't. Winnipeg won. And the thing that bothers me about this the most is that we are sitting here talking about this fumble or no fumble controversy instead of talking about how awesome a game that was. Holy hell, man. If there was one CFL game that you had to show someone outside of this botched call at the end here as to why you love the CFL, this Winnipeg-BC game was absolutely a back-and-forth action. Winnipeg takes a huge lead early. BC comes storming back. You had Manny Arsenault and Brian Burnham catching everything thrown their way. John Jennings playing like the quarterback that we expect him to be. Matt Nichols making some plays. The Bombers' offense scoring. Trick plays galore. They did a fake field goal. And on the very next play, they do a direct snap to Harris, pitch to Rory Kohlert, touchdown pass to Matt Nichols. Like, this game had it all. It was awesome. And we're sitting here talking about a botched call at the end of the game. I hate that. I wish we could just talk about how great this game was, but such is life as in CFL fandom, right?
Yeah, it was an awesome game to watch. And just going a little bit off topic here, I think there's been some talk about empty seats in Winnipeg this year. And I'm just going to say I'm not worried about the Winnipeg fan base. I think that they've been through a lot and they weren't sure about this team this season, even when they started winning. I'm sure there was a lot of doubts out there. I think they will come back strong late in this season or next season if they keep playing the way they're playing. So, you know, there's some markets that I'm worried about, but Winnipeg isn't one of them.
Well, it's funny. There is talk of there were empty seats at Investors Group Field, but there was a little over 24,000 seats sold. In Hamilton, that's more than a sellout. In Montreal, that's more than a sellout. In Ottawa, that's more than a sellout. So it's kind of interesting what their stadium holds like 33,000. Saskatchewan stadium holds about 33,000. And I know that football is big out there, but I'm just thinking they made these smaller stadiums in the East simply because they wanted demand to be higher than supply. So they lower supply. Iverwind Stadium had over 30,000, and there was days when there would be 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 empty seats, but there's still 23,000, 24,000 people there. 24,000 to me seems like the perfect size for a CFL stadium. Maybe you go to 27. 33 to me seems a little bit high, even though the football mad provinces of Manitoba and Saskatchewan. And I know at Edmonton, Commonwealth holds, what, like 65,000 people? But I think that's – they built that stadium. Like that was you're never going to get that filled. But there's a big appetite for football there too. But I don't – like you're not going to worry about empty seats in Edmonton when they have 35,000 people there. You know what I mean? I think maybe 25,000 to 27,000 is the size these stadiums should be, and maybe Winnipeg and Saskatchewan just bit off a little bit more than they can chew. But I'm with you. I don't really have any worries about attendance in Winnipeg.
No. But I mean, there's been a lot of great football played this year. I know a lot of the talk has been about controversies and all this stuff, but we got to look at the season as a whole. And man, I mean, compared to the last two seasons, the entertainment value is through the roof. In the CFL this year for a lot of the games.
You couldn't be more right. I don't remember in 2014 when everyone was talking, offense was down, Solomon Elamimian, who had a great year, won MOP because there was just no one else who could win it. People were like, has the CFL turned too defensive, blah, 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 blah. 2 years later, man, Edmonton-Hamilton was awesome. Labor Day was awesome. This game against, like, so many games, there was the double overtime game between well, just this week, Saskatchewan and Ottawa, a little bit boring to start, but what a hell of an ending. We've had the BC-Calgary game in Calgary where they went to, I think it was double overtime. Awesome. There's been so many overtime games, Edmonton-Ottawa from the first week of the season. Mm-hmm. We have really got our money's worth as CFL fans this year. And yeah, we're talking about controversy, but at the end of the day, we have been really entertained more often than not when it comes to these games.
Yep. You know, 300-yard passing is the norm now in a game. And it reminds me of the days, you know, back in the 90s when – or the early 2000s when, you know, the product on the field was really great. So I'm just really happy of the product on the field this season. I think it's come back strong. The last two seasons were really tough, but I think there's still a problem with penalties and there's still some problems, but overall, I think it's been a great season on the field.
All right, so we said there were two controversies this week. The next one comes courtesy of the Edmonton Eskimos. So they were advertised to take part in one of the three CFL Wired games of this past weekend. And about halfway through the first half of the game, fans started to notice, and you probably saw it on social media, that we hadn't really heard anything from Mike Riley or Jason Moss, the two people that were supposedly mic'd up. It was then reported a little bit later that the Eskimos had decided not to participate in the mic'd up, and Moss and Riley decided they weren't going to wear the mics. This was after TSN had hyped this for about a week. So because of their refusal to take part in this, just recently, Eskimos and Jason Moss were fined. The team was fined $20,000, and Moss was fined $15,000 and told that he would be suspended for a game if he failed to comply. Riley was not fined, and that's because the CBA states that players at any time can refuse to wear a microphone. So that's why Riley wasn't fined. So they refused to wear the mics for this game. I got to think this pissed TSN off. It definitely pissed the league off. If you read Jeffrey Orange's statement afterwards, he seemed pretty angry, especially at Jason Moss. So what do you think of all this? Do you think this thing has been blown out of proportion? Do you think the punishment was too much, not enough, just right? Just what are your general thoughts on this whole thing?
I think it was blown out of proportion a little bit, but I think that they could have done things to, you know, if they just would have said no, like earlier, you know, we're not going to do this. We refuse to do this. Just let TSN know, let the league know. I don't think it would have been such a big deal, but to not tell anyone and then just, you know, not comply with what they agreed to was, that's what got them in trouble. So, no, I don't think it was the worst thing in the world. They were worried about a competitive advantage, but, you know, you just look at, you know, the Stampeders. They did it a couple weeks ago and they haven't lost since. So I don't think there was anything there. I don't think there's any competitive advantage to listening in to the mic'd up coaches and quarterbacks. So I don't think it was a huge deal, but I think the punishment was probably right on.
I think the punishment was completely fair. Wally Buono wore a mic. This guy doesn't wear a headset. If it's good enough for Wally Buono, it's good enough for Jason Moss. Wally Buono's probably the greatest coach to ever coach the CFL. If he's good, if he thinks it's okay to wear a mic during a game, then Jason Moss can wear a goddamn microphone. My problem with all of this is simply when you grow up, when you're being taught as a little boy or little girl what you should do, what's one of the things your parents teaches you? It's that your word is your bond. You be a man or woman of your word. If you say you're going to do something, you do it. And that's what really ticked me off about this, is that the Edmonton Eskimos said they were going to do this. And then at the very last minute, literally when they walked into the stadium to participate in that game, said we're not going to do it. You can go on TSN's website. There is a video of Mike Riley talking about wearing a microphone in this game and how they better have the bleeps ready because of cursing and all this other sorts of stuff. They were prepared to do this and then decided at the last minute not to do it. The only people that I have seen so far say that the Eskimos were in the right happened to cheer for the Edmonton Eskimos. And I don't care about the mic'd up thing. Like, I don't, it doesn't add anything for me. But ratings were up over 14% from last year on this week's games. You got to think some of that has to do with this is kind of interesting. The Ticats Stampeders games that they did earlier in the year, the ratings were up for that game from the Ticats Stampeders games from a year before. So there is an interest there in fans. And TSN, whether we like to say it or not, they pretty much could get whatever they want. They are the reason this league basically still exists. That television contract is the biggest check that every single one of these teams gets. And for the Edmonton Eskimos to spit in the face of a league partner that pretty much keeps this league alive, I thought was very disrespectful and kind of shows the Eskimos going back to that way they were in the 80s that everyone talked about, where they were the evil empire. I don't know if you listen to the Blue Bomber Talk podcast, but I do. It's hosted by John Hodge, who I work with at Three Down Nation. And he had an interview with Farhan Lalji. And Farhan Lalji of TSN, they asked him, what did you think about this? And he had a very passionate, very well-said reasoning for why the Eskimos were in the wrong for this. If you haven't listened to it, yourself, Mike, or anyone out there listening, go find the episode and listen to it. It is awesome. And basically, he said it better than I ever could. So I'm just very disappointed in Edmonton that they would do something like this. And there are some rumors now that there are two teams that have not participated in Mic'd Up. It's the Eskimos and it's the Argonauts. And those two teams play in week 20 of this season. There's rumors that is going to be a Mic'd Up game that gives the Argos a chance to be Mic'd Up. And Jason Moss will now. Mike Riley can still deny it. Drew Willey can still deny it if he wants to, but the coaches are going to have to be mic'd up for this game. And it'll be very interesting to see if Jason Moss will turn it down, because Orrig said in his statement that we will suspend him for a playoff or championship game if that's the next game. So if Moss is going to be mic'd up in week 20, the next game he's going to play is either the East or West semi. Could you imagine the Edmonton Eskimos without their head coach for a playoff game? No. I think that's more of a competitive disadvantage than wearing a microphone.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, they're not going to do that. They'll be mic'd up for that game, guaranteed. I mean, they're not going to – I mean, Moss isn't going to sit out a playoff game just because he doesn't want to be mic'd up. And, you know, touching on the TSN thing, I mean, who else is going to broadcast the CFL games? Sportsnet isn't. Sportsnet has the Blue Jays every single day in the summer pretty much. Maybe they broadcast them, they put them aside, like they show them on like Sportsnet 1 or something. They bury the CFL if they ever got the rights to it. I think, you know, who else is gonna get the rights? CBC doesn't bid on professional sports anymore. They have hockey still, just clinging on to hockey. But, I mean, Global, I don't know. I think that TSN is their only option. And, they do. I mean, they probably wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for TSN.
No, TSN has done more to promote this league. Remember when they were – you remember. You're old enough. We're both old enough to remember these games on CBC. Do you remember a pregame show on CBC? Do you remember a top 50 list? Do you remember a season preview show? Do you remember all the stuff, the mini documentaries, the Road to the Grey Cups that TSN produces? TSN has helped make this league bigger than it has ever been. And I just think that if that's the major partner for this league, and if they want to do something, and the entire board of governors, which again, read Orrig's statement, all nine teams agreed to this, for one team to decide they don't want to do it, it just sits wrong with me. Yeah, well, you know what? Also, think about – okay, so I don't want to harp on Eskimo fans too much, but this just came to mind. How would they react if the Saskatchewan Roughriders had pulled this, if the Calgary Stampeders had done this? How would people react if Ken Austin had decided he was going to wear a mic, or Jim Popp? It would be talking about arrogance and how – and all that other stuff. Like, the Edmonton Eskimos don't get away with it just because they're the Edmonton Eskimos. Like, all these teams have agreed to do it, and they would be furious, absolutely furious – if another team did this, and I think that's pretty much where I come down on it.
Yeah, I think that if it was the Rough Riders, they'd probably, you know, be pretty pissed off about it.
Yeah. Okay, so let's put all this away. This is off-the-field stuff. Mike, we got a game. We got a game this week. It's finally here. The first game of the back-to-back with Ottawa, the series that I believe you and I have pretty much been hyping up since the schedule came out. The Ticats are billing this as a fight for first place. And while that is technically true, I don't think that that fits, because these two teams are not very good. And yes, it is a fight for first place. So I was thinking, how about we rebrand this a battle for least worst? Because I think that's a little more apt. Both teams under 500, and they're the top two teams in the division. And both of these teams are likely going to make the playoffs. And one of these teams is going to host the East Final and be one win away from the Grey Cup, despite finishing with maybe 8 or 9 wins. So what do you think? Battle for least worst? Does that sound good to you?
Yeah, it sounds more appropriate to me.
All right, so offense, man, here we go. I got three keys to the game for the offense. Number one, protect the quarterback. Ottawa's 34 sacks are in the top half of the league this year. They're fourth. Hamilton will be starting a new left tackle, as we talked about, and the recently acquired Xavier Fulton, and a new right tackle in Terrence Campbell. So this new line will have to gel quickly to keep that pass rush at bay. I think adding Fulton, again, we talked about this already, major coup. So I hope these changes, you know, that these is two new tackles, essentially, with Campbell moving over. Hopefully this can lead to a Ticats victory on Friday. Secondly, I think they got to limit turnovers. Hamilton has 37 turnovers on the season. That is the second most in the league. And they've allowed 109 points off those turnovers, which is also second in the league. But there is a silver lining. Ottawa has just 21 takeaways on the season, which is the second worst mark in the CFL in 2016. Ottawa last year, they were a takeaway machine. They tied with Hamilton for the most interceptions. But this year, they're not so much. So if the Ticats can avoid turning the ball over, and with Jeremiah Mazzoli starting at quarterback, who knows? There's games where he doesn't miss a pass, and then there's games where he throws 4 interceptions. But I think if they can avoid turning the ball over, their chances of winning greatly increase. And thirdly, I think they need to hit some big plays. Ottawa has allowed what the CFL describes as big plays 37 times. These are runs of 20-plus yards, passes of 30-plus yards, punt returns and missed field goal returns of 30-plus yards, and kick returns of 40-plus yards. Out of the 37 big plays that Ottawa has given up, 27 have come via the pass. Hamilton has the second most pass attempts of any team and throws it almost 40 times a game, which is the most per game average in the league. Hamilton has been known as a big play offense, but they haven't really been one recently. And I think if they can get back to that against Ottawa, there's a good chance that the Hamilton Ticats will end this game atop these divisions. So to recap, my three keys to the game: protect the quarterback, limit turnovers, and old baby hit some big plays.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with all that. And, you know, I think that the receivers, Childs, Junior Collins, those guys that aren't veterans in this receiving corps, need to contribute. They need to get open. They need to make plays for Mazzoli. Gable's back. You know what I'm going to say. So
I know exactly what you're going to say. I will
not even fucking say it.
Should we say it together? 3, 2, 1, run damn ball.
Yeah, there we go. So I doubt that's going to happen, but I hope they do. I hope Gable gets the ball quite a bit, and the new receivers make some plays.
Yeah, it would help take some pressure off Mazzoli, who I don't really think you need to take pressure off. This guy has started enough games in this league. We've seen what he can do. We know what he's capable of. We also know what he's incapable of. So I don't think they need to necessarily take pressure off him. But again, a good running game always helps the offense. So, Mike, defensively, what are you looking at for this game?
Defensively, you know, with Chris Williams out, I'm looking at the secondary to, cover the other guys like Ellingson, like Ernest Jackson. I know I'm missing someone. Who's the other?
Brad Sinopoli.
Sinopoli. So take care of them. Pressure burst. I mean, get him off his game. We talk about every week pressure the quarterback, but it's true. Like, you have to get pressure on Burst. If you just let him sit back there and have time, he's gonna tear apart the defense. But if you get him rattled, he's gonna make some mistakes. We've seen it in the past. So you gotta take care of Burris, and You know, I'm not too worried about the running game. I think Trayvon Van's a quality running back, but I think that our run defense can really shut them down too. So, yeah, those are three areas that pretty much look at every week, but again this week.
Okay, so I'm going to make, you know, remember what last year we used to make bold predictions for the games? We stopped doing it this week because it got really hard. I'm going to make one for this game, and I hope we remember it, and we'll come back next week and talk about it. Keon Raymond, he's going to have a pick six.
That would be awesome.
He's known to do it. He's a big play guy. He knows Henry Burris. They played a lot of years together in Calgary. I think Keon Raymond comes in, becomes an instant fan favorite with a big pick six off Henry Burris.
And also, Smarty Lawrence, I mean, go low on Burris anytime he comes. Just kidding. But really, though, these two teams have built up a rivalry, and I think it's amazing that they haven't played yet this year, and I'm pretty excited for these two games. I mean, screw those guys. They're standing in our way of first place, and I hope they, you know, beat them down badly in both games.
I'm going to both games. I'm heading to this game, obviously, in Hamilton, and a week from now, I will be in our nation's capital to cheer our boys on in Ottawa, just like I was last year. So hopefully I'm going to see a couple of wins. Last year, the Red Blacks got the best of us, and I had to see and eat some crow after the game in Ottawa. Hoping this year I'm doing a little bit more peacocking and less crow eating. And I think if the Ticats can win both these games, they will have essentially, they'll be 3 points up on Ottawa with two games left to play. They will have essentially clinched the East Division with games against Montreal and Edmonton at home. Fingers crossed. They got to win the first one before they can win the second one. So here's hoping they get a victory this week. So you ready to do some picks?
Yep.
All right. So after week 16, our top three, there's a little bit of movement in the top three. Number one and two stay the same, but we got a new little guy in third place. So Cappy D still owns this group with 9,270 points.
You don't bet.
Yeah, geez, like he's just not letting up on that first place grip. It's getting tough. We got Andrew in second, 8,113 points, and yours truly has climbed the ladder from fourth into third. I think it had to have been my Saskatchewan pick last year or last week when I took them to go into Ottawa. I don't know if you read the picks on Three Down Nation, but we do picks for the website every week, and I picked the Riders. And a commenter's like, oh, big surprise, Smith doesn't pick Ottawa. And I wanted to comment after the game and go, well, it was a pretty smart pick considering Saskatchewan won, but discretion was the better part of valor there, and I decided to just let it hang there. I just thought it was funny that someone's like, oh, he's not picking Ottawa because he hates Ottawa. It's like, I didn't pick Ottawa because I thought Saskatchewan was actually going to win. And guess what? I was right. So anyway, I am sitting in third with 7,672 points. Mike, you fell from 16th to 17th, 4,881 points. You got a lot of catching up to do, buddy.
No, I think I went 2-2 last week, so it's been a rough ride since about week two or three.
Yeah, I need those streak points. You gotta start piling together the wins. So let's get to the picks this week. First game of the week, we got double headers on Friday and Saturday night. My favorite. I love when we have early game Friday, late game Friday, early game Saturday, late game Saturday. It's my favorite. So first game is here in Hamilton between the Red Blacks and the Tiger Cats. Mike, who do you got?
I'm taking Hamilton at home. I was going back and forth all week on who I was going to pick, but I'm hoping with all those new moves, with the new guys in there, they're going to help out a lot, and we're going to beat up on Burris and take a win and claim first place in the East from the Ottawa Redblacks.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Ticats as well. I don't really trust either of these teams, to be perfectly honest, so in teams of two evenly matched squads, I'm going to take the home team. We'll see what happens this week. It could dictate who we pick next week, but let's be honest, we're probably both going to take Hamilton no matter what happens in this game, but I do think the Ticats take this one in a pretty tight contest. I think a low-scoring tight contest with Keon Raymond's pick six being a major contributing factor in a Ticats win. The second half of the Friday doubleheader sees a rematch of last week's excellent game between the Bombers and the Lions. This time we switch. It's Winnipeg heading to BC. Hopefully there's no controversial calls at the end of this one. So, Mike, who do you got, the Bombers or the Lions?
Now, it's so tough to win back-to-back games against the same opponent. So I'm going to take BC at home. They had a chance to win that game last week. Didn't go their way. But I also like Winnipeg. I think I was unsure about Winnipeg after their two-game losing streak, but then they beat BC. So I'm going to take BC at home, though. I just think they're going to win this game and, you know, move up in the West standings.
Yeah, after last week's game, I took the Lions there. Thought they could have pulled it out. They were so close. At home, again, like I said with Hamilton, Ottawa, two really evenly matched teams. I'm going to take the home team. I think BC finds a way to get it done. I don't know if this one's going to be as exciting as the previous week's game. We'll see. I still think it's going to be a darn good football game, but I like the Lions by a hair in this one. Saturday afternoon, the first half of that doubleheader sees the Saskatchewan Roughriders, who are on a three-game winning streak, head to take on the woeful Toronto Argonauts. Mike, who do you have in this contest?
I got to go with Saskatchewan. I mean, they just look like a different team these last couple of games. You know, you're seeing that Jones type offense that he had in Edmonton. They brought in some players. They're playing better on offense. And Toronto is just in shambles. I don't have any faith in them. So I'm going to take the Riders.
Drew Willie still starting for the Toronto Argonauts?
Yeah.
Then I'm not taking the Toronto Argonauts. I'm taking the Riders. It's weird, though. Like, this Saskatchewan team has really started to gel. They were just eliminated from the playoff conversation. Like, they can't make the playoffs now. They are one of the hottest teams in the league right now. And, man, as much as it sucks to say, I think this team has found some players. They've found some cohesion. This could be a really dangerous football team next year. Don't be surprised if the Saskatchewan Roughriders find a way to make the playoffs next year in a very, very tough West division. But, man, I don't know who in the West is going to fall, because one of those teams is at least not going to make the playoffs, and I don't know which one it is. But I like what the Riders are doing. I'm going to take the Riders in this one to extend that streak to 4. All right, Saturday night, last game of the week, Calgary at Montreal. Is it even worth asking?
Not really. I got Calgary. They're just too good of a team to lose to the Alouettes. Alouettes had that one game where they looked good. The first game was Jacques Chapdelaine at the helm, but then they fell off last week. So you got to take Calgary. They have a soft schedule the rest of the way, I think. I think they have a really good chance of being 16-1-1 when this thing is done. So, yeah, I got Calgary.
The only way the Stamps don't finish with the best record in league history is if they decide to sit everybody in these meaningless games. They've already clinched the West Division. They're going to be playing at home in the West Final. The only way they don't win out is if they just decide to pull guys and or something like that. Like Mitchell will play a half and then in comes Drew Tate. But I'm looking for a reason to not pick Calgary, but they're so darn efficient. They just go out there and they just kill you. And, you know, you want to say trap game or whatever, Calgary doesn't fall into traps. So as much as I'd like to have the nuts and take the Alouettes in this one, there is no way in hell I'm betting against the Calgary Stampeders. So I, too, have Calgary in this one. So I believe you and I have picked all 4 the same this week.
Yes, indeed.
That is very rare. So before we get out of here, I would like to just one last little bit of housework here. And I'd like to promote an event. We did this last year and we'll continue to do it this year. The CFL Fans Fight Cancer event. It takes place during Grey Cup week. This time it's in Toronto, obviously. The event will be held on Saturday, November 26th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Shoeless Joe's, which is at 276 King Street West in Toronto. All the proceeds from the event will benefit the Wellspring Downtown Toronto facility. So Grey Cup's in my backyard, but I don't know how many Grey Cup events, if any, I will get to. But if I do end up hitting up some of the festivities, this will be one that I will go to, for sure. Sadly, you know, most of us have been touched by cancer. In a couple of weeks, it will have been 3 years since my grandfather died of cancer. So anything anyone does, as far as I'm concerned, to help fight this disease has my full support. So until this event takes place, you're going to be hearing us promote it. Hopefully they get a lot of people out, raise a ton of money, and it should be a good time. So if you're in the Toronto area for the Grey Cup, be sure to hit up the event on the 26th at Shoeless Joe's. I've been to Shoeless Joe's before. It's a really nice place.
Yeah, it's an event that's been going on for years and years now at the Grey Cup. So I believe they had one in Moncton, the one Touchdown Atlantic game. I think it was the last one. So yeah, it's a great event. Go check it out. Pretty sure it happens every year. So yeah, head down to Shoeless Joe's and have some fun.
And raise some money for a good cause. So Mike, that's it. We're done. We're out of here. You can subscribe to the podcast if you're a listener here on iTunes, or listen to the show over on 3 Down Nation. We didn't do questions this week because we had so much news to talk about. Man, the Ticats did not make it easy on us. But hey, that's the fun of the show, right? But if you want to ask us a question, you can ask myself or Mike on Twitter. Mike, Give them your Twitter handle, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And you can find me at JoshSmith_82. And, of course, always post those questions for either of us in the comments section on 3DownNation. So, that was episode 60. Mike, we are, in some cases, now a senior citizens podcast. It's crazy to think, but we've made it to episode 60. We're on the road to 100. I don't know. Maybe we have to do something special for 100, but we're probably about a year away from hitting that mark. But I think it's coming up fast. Who thought we'd hit 60, right?
Exactly. I think 5 more episodes and then we're senior citizens.
Yeah.
Is it 65?
Yeah, it depends. Like, my dad hit 60 and then he started getting seniors discounts in like Niagara Falls for like the wax museums and stuff. They would say like, oh, is anyone 60? And my dad would like strut to the front and go, I'm 60, and hand them like, his driver's license or something. So in some places, 60, mostly you're a senior 65, but I do know my father has received some senior citizens discount when he turned 60 a few years ago. So it counts. I'm saying it counts. We're old men. All right. Damn it. We're old men. Anyway, that was episode 60 of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.